We interrupt our program to bring you this important message.
Do you really understand what this country is all about?
I hear all kinds of misconceptions and misstatements.
Light this motherfucker up!
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The idea of patriotism assumes that the government and the citizens have the same interest.
Peace is a beautiful but shitty idea.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God damn America.
Let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is fear.
Well, this bomb, we have now added a new and revolutionary increase in destruction.
By any means necessary.
Tyranny, like hell, is not easily conquered. Yet we have this consolation with us, that the harder the conflict, the more glorious the triumph.
What's up, Hep Cadets, Cats, and Kittens? It's your host, Moxie O'Brien, back again with another episode of Come and See here on another Friday morning in America. And I interrupt your regularly scheduled spooky season with a special news bulletin from your host, which is me, that I am also interrupting. It is me that is interrupting me, apparently. We're going to take that back. So, originally, today's episode of the show was supposed to be about demonic possession as, like, the continuation of our coverage of spooky season for Halloween time, right? Except this thing keeps fucking digging in the back of my brain, and I feel like I have to talk about it. Well, I've started to talk about it several times, but then I stop myself because I say, no, Mox, we're not doing socio-political time right now. We're doing spooky season. Let's talk about witches. And I've allowed myself to do that for like three episodes now, and I can't do it anymore. So we're gonna talk about Kanye West, we're going to talk about Black Israelism, and we're going to have a conversation that is not led by white people about Black nationalism, because all of you are getting it wrong. It is a serious problem, and I feel like it should be addressed. So that's what today's episode is going to be. We're pushing back demonic possession to Friday, which is okay, because we were covering channeling on Friday, and what we're going to do is we're just going to link them on up and do like a twofer in one episode. So on Friday, we'll be covering demonic possession, Pentecost, channeling, and angelology, which is fine. That's okay. That's like a one-stop weird Christian shop for Friday's episode. We're going to do all of that then. Today, we're going to talk about all of the anti-Semitism that's been going on in the news, because it's been bothering me a lot as a person who's familiar with the history of anti-Semitism in hip-hop and the Black Hebrew Israelite movement and the 5% Nation, and how prevalent these things have been in the urban Black community, but specifically the hip-hop community, since like the 1970s. Which is saying something, because like the 5% Nation got founded in like 1967, I believe. And for the record, as a group, the 5% Nation exists because a dude didn't think that Elijah Muhammad of the Nation of Islam was black enough. So if you're curious what sort of people we're talking about, these are people who thought that the man who told everyone that the black man is the direct descendant of God, and that white people were invented in a lab by a big-headed man named Yacoub, this cat thought the dude who was telling people that was too white. So that's why the 5% Nation is a thing. And as it happens, kind of in the same way that the Nation of Islam ingratiated itself into a lot of circles in the 1950s and particularly the 1960s, by virtue of providing security to a lot of events, groups, individuals, etc., with the fruit of Islam. The 5% Nation provided security to a lot of things, like during the establishment of hip hop, like when you had a lot of like territory and gang violence going on, the 5% Nation was sort of like a religious affiliate organization that would step in and keep the peace between everybody because they were territory neutral as a religious organization. And as such, the guys who started hip-hop have had affiliation with this hyper-nationalist black separatist organization going back 45 or 50 years. I mean, and it's always been, like, evidenced within the culture to an extent. You can see aspects of the sacred mathematics and, like, the slang that the 5% Nation developed all through hip-hop. And the thing of that is, while we don't want to have a conversation about how hip-hop and urban black culture is the foundation for what is modern American culture in most ways, because so much of hip-hop and urban black culture was in, like, the 1970s and 80s, kind of disseminated and filtered through this lens of anti-Semitic, hyper-black nationalist, Muslim-adjacent pseudo-religion. So then is, like, everything that most of you say, most of what you listen to, a lot of your favorite artists. And when I say a lot of your favorite artists, I mean all of them. It's something that's been prevalent for a really long time that I think because, all right, if I can relate this to a previous episode of the show, if you go back to the pilot season, the finale of the pilot season discusses George Lincoln Rockwell. And in the George Lincoln Rockwell episode, we discuss how the Jewish community's method of dealing with him and the American Nazi Party was to themselves and to ask the press anywhere that George Lincoln Rockwell showed up to act like he didn't exist. To completely freeze him out of the newspapers, out of television coverage, to essentially take all of his ability to rile up crowds by taking the crowds away by not telling anyone he was coming. And I think that in a lot of ways, how the black community, if we can be so bold as to say such a thing exists, avoids spreading certain ideas is by not talking about them in front of white people, which is why there's like certain figures in like Hotepery and like black nationalism and black Israelism and the 5% Nation, etc., that a lot of white people have never heard of. And we'd like to keep it that way. So it was difficult for me to figure out how I wanted to talk about this episode of the show without listing a whole bunch of things that a bunch of white people are then going to ineptly go look up and quote inappropriately and say or do the wrong thing, because it's kind of what you do. So I think that while having a conversation about the implications of these influences is necessary, I also think that it's fair enough to say that a lot of this stuff constitutes closed practice, and a lot of black nationalists wouldn't want white people reading their books. So I'm not going to tell you what books to go read. But I will tell you that, you know, if you've ever listened to the rap music from the 70s, 80s, or 90s, or in fact 2000s, and it's not even fair to say it's making a comeback when you think about the timeline, because you've got people like Kodak Black, Kendrick Lamar, Chance the Rapper, etc., all professing this shit now, and of course, Kanye West just kind of going for fucking broke out there. But it's always been a thing. It's prevalent in the language. I've alluded in past episodes of the show that hip-hop was kind of a way that black people taught each other things, or at least the black people who ingested hip-hop and hip-hop culture, that we educated one another through at least to some people, I should say, hip-hop was viewed as a means of educating one another and elevating the black consciousness by teaching each other things. And I think that in many ways, that's sort of like the foundation of what the Wu-Tang Clan is. And you'll note, the Wu-Tang Clan intrinsically tied to the 5% Nation, which it surprises me whenever people tell me they don't know that, because the second Wu-Tang Clan album opens with a 6.5 minute long intro wherein a member of the 5% Nation expounds in detail on the tenets and beliefs of the 5% Nation and the ideas of the gods and the earths. But I guess, you know, cool beat or whatever, so people weren't paying attention. I don't know. I always skip that one because the violin in Reunited is fucking dope, but that's beside the point. I could also mention that I spent a lot of my youth going around quoting that song in the old Dirty Bastard verse where he says, "I come like a thousand doves," and not understanding why people thought I was too young to be saying things like that, because, well, I was 12. Anyway, Wu-Tang, Nas, Mobb Deep, of course, all the hyper-conscious stuff like Brand Nubian. I was conflating Grand Poobah and Brand Nubian, because it's actually both of them. Rakim, Big Daddy Kane. Like, it's a prevalent movement within hip-hop, and it's been around, actually. Like, Black Israelism as a thing. I shouldn't conflate Black Israelism and the 5% Nation. They are two separate things that have very, very similar ideologies. And as I said, the 5% Nation is derived from the Nation of Islam. The Black Hebrew Israelites, which is what Ye West, I think it's Ye West now. I've heard him referred to as the artist formerly known as Kanye West, but that just feels like a Prince ripoff and I don't like it. We'll say Ye West because I don't want to dead name anybody or anything, but I don't really know exactly what he goes by anymore. But what he's professing and what a lot of other rap artists have professed is Black Hebrew Israelism. And that's actually been around since like the mid-1890s, since slightly after slavery was abolished. Two cats, Frank Cherry and, oh God, what's the other guy's name? Give me one second. Son of a bitch, Bill Crowdy. There we go. They didn't necessarily come up with this idea together. They both claimed that it came to them in visions. In the case of Bill Crowdy, he just suddenly, after coming home from the war, which suggests to me that some of this may very well have been tied to post-traumatic stress, would go into these long periods where he would wouldn't speak, and it would seem like he couldn't hear people talking to him, and he would say that he'd had visions of how the black man was the original 12th tribe of the 13th tribe of it, the lost tribe of Israel. And Frank Cherry, he's the more openly anti-Semitic of the two, also believed that the world was square. And preached that Jesus was going to come back to start a race war in the year 2000, which you'll note didn't happen. Both of these guys, like I said, sort of came up with the same general idea right around the same time, although Frank established a church espousing his beliefs about 10 years before Bill did. And these ideas, through Frank's journeys into Philadelphia and kind of a positive relationship with Marcus Garvey, and his ability to give a lot of black people a message that they were amenable to at the time, which is something we've talked about white people identifying very greatly with on the show, and that's this idea that you're special. You know, that's the analog to Black Hebrew Israelism is Christian identity, and they are very much the same thing. You find that Black Hebrew Israelism is older, but the foundations of Christian identity are British Israelism, and I would say that was about the same time, if not a little bit earlier than Black Hebrew Israelism. So these ideas of these disparate groups that have over time drifted further and further and further to the fringe, that they are in fact the lost tribe of Israel, and how that somehow implies something insidious about the Jewish people, has been around for like 200 fucking years. And the problem is, they are both, having been around as long as they have, relatively unknown to the general public until fairly recently. You know, as we discussed way back in the pilot season, I believe during the Bill Cooper series, and yes, he is going to come up today, that the synagogue shooter in Pittsburgh, the anniversary of which is coming up, if I'm not mistaken, he was a Christian identity adherent, and that movement is, because of its ties to Posse Comitatus and the sovereign citizen movement, it produces a lot of really violent people. And for the most part, that hasn't been a thing with Black Hebrew Israelites. They just kind of yell things at you. But what you've seen in the last few years, and I would like to discuss this a bit further as well, because I think I'm uniquely qualified to comment on it, with a sort of surge in Black sovereign citizens, you're seeing more violent people who espouse this ideology. Case in point, Daryl Brooks, who is on trial in Wisconsin right now. He's a Black sovereign citizen, and you can see how frustrating it is for a judge to deal with a sovereign citizen in a courtroom if you watch any of the clips of his trial. And that's a movement that, because of some of its beliefs, we're going to cover sovereign citizens in detail in season 4. We've touched on them a little bit in the past, sort of as they relate to Bill, because a lot of people were of the belief that Bill Cooper was a sovereign citizen. There's an argument that could be made. I'm not sold on the idea necessarily, but there's enough evidence to suggest that that's the case. He was definitely being monitored as one. Sovereign citizens are typically white because of some of the beliefs held about the 13th and 14th Amendment. A lot of sovsits believe that Black people can't be citizens because of the wording of the 13th Amendment, which precludes them from being actual full-fledged citizens, which is why a lot of white sovereign citizens refer to Black people as 13th Amendment people. Because we weren't citizens whenever the Constitution was ratified, so it doesn't apply to us. So there's a real movement within sovereign citizenry that Black people do not have and do not deserve rights because we weren't part of the citizenry whenever the country was established. And therefore, that's how you see people who will shoot cops over being stopped for traffic tickets, defending cops shooting Black people because Black people don't have as many rights as everyone else because we weren't full citizens at the time of the ratification of the Constitution. In fact, I think we were, 2/5, 5/7, 8/12. I know it was less than a whole person, though. So there's that aspect of sovereign citizenry, but despite that, the sort of Hotep movement and Black Israelite movement, as they've drifted further and further right over the years, have kind of started to intersect with sovereign citizenry. And so you're seeing more militant people who hold these beliefs. And so I think it's probably a good idea to start paying attention to them. Because as we've seen with their white counterparts, these ideologies can lead to a lot of lone wolf terrorism. And it was a very unhinged difficult to track people as well. Now, I'm not suggesting any of those things about Kanye West. Well, I am suggesting that he's unhinged. I watched like a 3-hour interview that he did with someone in Lex Fridman today. And that was a difficult thing to watch as someone who used to be a fan of his, I should say. I think that it's difficult understanding that hip hop is so tied to this stuff. Growing up as a person who looked up to a lot of artists in hip hop, and understanding that that means a lot of them hold a lot of very Nazi adjacent beliefs. And when I say that, Tom Metzger, who we've covered on this show previously, he famously of the racial the Aryan the he started war the website that was adjacent to LibertyNet. He was a former Grand Wizard of the Klan. He himself referred to Black Hebrew Israelism as the African-American counterpart to the KKK. And that was coming from a member of the KKK at the time. So, in his opinion, I think that was a good thing. And in fact, you do actually notice in a lot of cases that groups like the Nation of Islam, the 5% Nation, and Black Israelites tend to get along just fine with Nazis and the Klan. In fact, I believe we mentioned back on the George Lincoln Rockwell episode of the show, he spoke at NOI rallies and in fact donated $20 to Malcolm X at one point because they both supported the idea of Black separatism. So there's a lot of overlap between these ideas. There's a lot of susceptibility to things like Holocaust denial and other conspiratorial thinking. And I think that's something that, because conspiracy culture has been, since 9/11 and since Alex Jones in particular, so intrinsically tied to far right-wing white nationalist extremism, something that a lot of people forget. And one of the things that I think is important about the lineage of Bill Cooper is that conspiratorial thinking used to be a very Black space and exercise in going back from the 90s on backwards. And there's good cause for that. As a group of people, this was a group that knew that it was being monitored by the government, knew that it was being watched by the police, knew that there were people out to get them, and were aware of things like COINTELPRO and the secret police and union cops and shit like that, that actually developed legitimate paranoia based on real plots from people who were actually out to get them for generations and generations and generations. So conspiratorial thinking within the Black community is actually quite prevalent. It's just not something that I think a lot of white people are aware of. It's looked at as something that the kind of people who watch Alex Jones are interested in. But even in that, I submit to you, if you actually looked at racial demographics for Alex Jones, you'd be surprised. I can tell you that Bill, for his part of things, had an extraordinarily large Black audience. Number one, because of the bent towards conspiratorial thinking. Number two, because of the prevalence of his book in prisons. And number three, because of the Nation of Islam, the 5% Nation, Black Hebrew Israelites, and Bill's propensity for at least dog whistle-ish anti-Semitic things like putting the protocols of the Elders of Zion in copies of Behold a Pale Horse until 2004. So when you look at why people like Prodigy from Mobb Deep or Tupac or the Old Dirty Bastard or Jay-Z or the other various members of the Wu-Tang Clan, Rakim, Nas, Cool G Rap, any number of fucking people, were talking about how Bill Cooper was a genius who knew the truth, a lot of that had to do with the fact that Bill, if you massaged his message, was talking about the Jews. And that's not difficult to glean from the fact that, again, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion was in his goddamn book. Bill's workaround was saying that he didn't really mean the Jews. He thought that if you exchanged the word Jews for sheeple, it meant the same thing. But the reality is, as is always the case with these guys who use these texts, who then say, well, I don't mean it in a racist way. That's fair enough to you, but all of the racists don't care that you don't mean it in a racist way. So it doesn't really make a difference how you meant it if Nazis are applauding your efforts, which is exactly what's happening to Kanye West right now. I mean, the fact that he's black would still be a barrier for him to come over for dinner, and it's not like they're going to go out and buy a copy of Graduation, but I'm sure a lot of people love the fact that a billionaire who's been seen with lots of famous people and who's been name-dropped by Barack Obama and is at the level of Kanye West is saying shit from, like, white replacement theory on the evening news in interviews with Tucker Carlson. And I feel like there's something that could be said about the way the media is covering Kanye West, but I'll get to that in a bit. I'm not done with the Bill Cooper stuff yet. The relationship between Bill and the ADL is something that's been, like, he was accused of Holocaust denial, which he responded to by denying the numbers of the Holocaust in a letter that he, in an open letter that he wrote to the ADL. By saying, I never denied the Holocaust, but while we're talking about it, maybe we should argue about these numbers a little bit, which is not a good look ever. So there was that. He was in a long battle that went on for years with the Anti-Defamation League about accusations of anti-Semitism, because he said anti-Semitic shit all the time. And it's that connection to that thing that lurks behind stories about the Illuminati, the reptilians, the New World Order, the globalists, the financial elite, the banksters. All of those words mean Jew. I don't know how better to explain this to people that, like, I've been arguing about this shit with people for like 25 goddamn years. Whenever anyone says something about the Illuminati, the secret global elite, the people who run everything, quote unquote, the people you don't talk about, any of those things, they all mean Jew. And the violence prevalent in the groups of people who espouse these beliefs goes back just as far as it does for the Christian identity movement. You know, a black Hebrew Israelite killed Martin Luther King Jr.'s mother. They tried to assassinate Jesse Jackson. There's several different, you know, you get it in your head that certain black people are false prophets preaching against the truth. And keeping the black man enslaved by espousing the lies of the white devil, and it makes sense to kill them. And that's kind of one of the scarier aspects of this, and the other is all the ties to, like I said, things like Nazi-adjacent theology or Nazi-adjacent beliefs that are you know, Holocaust denial, praise for Adolf Hitler, the idea that there are benefits to eugenics, just in the opposite conception of how white people think of it. It's just the bizarro interpretation of white nationalism. Black nationalism is in many ways, and you know, I hate to say this because there's a lot of aspects of black nationalism that I myself agree with, and that's part of why this conversation is difficult for me, because it's impossible not to acknowledge some of the more problematic aspects of this ideology. Even though it is an ideology, I kind of have. Not the anti-Semitic aspects of it. My personal feelings are, with American history being what it is, and my personal experiences in the activist space, dealing with other people in on the ground situations and community defense, things of that nature. I don't know that collaborative racial society is ever going to work. And that's not to say that I'm not open to the idea of it working. It means that I'm inherently mistrustful of any white people who are ever in charge of anything. And that if you suggest any form of government to me that's in any way different from what we currently have, which sucks, and white people are still in charge, I don't inherently see much of a difference. So there's aspects of black nationalism, black liberation, etc., that are very, very appealing to me personally. That enough so that I've used that label to describe myself variously in the past. But it's tied to, as is the case with any of these movements, the idea that not only is your particular group inherently great, it is superior to all other groups, which are in fact inferior. And that's the thing that I don't really have a whole lot of time for. I believe in black excellence. I believe that the black people are inherently spectacular. I believe we're capable of achieving greatness. I believe that many of the greatest things that have happened in human history are the accomplishments of the black people. But I don't necessarily think that means that we're the best people. I think all people are great, but I think it's appropriate to have a love, respect, and pride in your own respective group without saying, and by the way, fuck everyone who's not black. I think that's the bridge too far that I don't cross between me and these people. You know, it's the same thing with sovereign citizenry. There are, as a person who has at length studied sovereign citizenry, the concepts of pseudo law, I've read Black's Law Dictionary, for fuck's sake. There's a lot of ideas, not in pseudo-law, that's absolute fucking horseshit, but there's a lot of ideas in relationship to individual sovereignty in the face of a government that I very much agree with. I mean, as a gun owner who doesn't think the federal government should be able to tell me what to do outside of, you know, don't kill people who don't deserve it, and things of that nature, there's a lot of sovereign citizenry that makes sense to me. It's the ridiculous shit about, you know, some people not being people and other people are two people because they have a flesh and blood person and a legal person. It's complicated. I'll explain it to you later. That makes me say, no, okay, so this is founded in things that make sense, but it's fundamentally nonsense when you start picking at it. And such is the case with Black Hebrew Israelism. You know, the two cats who really founded this movement were former slaves. And I can understand how two former slaves wanted to feel special. And there's nothing wrong inherently with wanting to feel special. I can understand why any black person living in the United States of America would have a desire to feel special. We are told on a regular basis that we are not. So I understand that. The problem is whenever you start referring to yourself as the real Jews and calling other Jewish people interlopers, and echoing the Christian identity idea that Jews are the spawn of a marriage between Eve and Satan. It's okay to think that God thinks you're special. That's a fine thing to think. He's not real. Think whatever you want to about him. But it's whenever your belief in that God involves the suppression of another group of people, the subjugation of another group of people, or your beliefs require you to step on another group of people, that your beliefs become a problem. And you'll note that in many cases, as a group of people that profess themselves to be Jews, many Black Israelites do not learn, practice Judaism. They don't recognize the Talmud. You know, they're not recognized as having gone through the processes necessary to be considered Jewish by the Jewish community. They just sort of decided they were that. And while it's fair to say that, like, there's precedence for there being Ethiopian Jews, the Beta Israel, which have been in Ethiopia since, like, shortly after the time of Abraham. That's a thing, don't get me wrong. There's also less than 150,000 of them that can be traced genetically worldwide. So to put that into perspective, there's like 40,000 people as of the 1980s professing to be Black Israelites, and including the, I think, 70,000 that live in Ethiopia, there's 125,000 people worldwide genetically linked to be Jews from Ethiopia. So you do the math, a lot of people are probably full of shit. And, you know, in the sake of fairness, I don't want to present it like everyone who adheres to Black Hebrew Israelism is specifically anti-Semitic or racist or anything like that. They're not. There's between 30 and 40,000 people who are identified as Black Hebrew Israelites in the United States. And maybe in Israel as well, because some of them did move there, although that's a whole process that we could talk about too. But about 40,000 of them, maybe worldwide. And the last time I checked, the SPLC identifies 145 of them as hate groups and terrorist organizations. So, yeah, give or take, that's probably most, I would imagine. I don't know how many groups 40,000 people can possibly break down into, but for 145 of them to be considered hate groups, it's something of a trend. But again, I think that what is lost sight of a lot of the time is that this is very much the Black interpretation of the Christian identity movement in every way that that can be interpreted, in as far as, yeah, a lot of these people are racist. A lot of them own guns. A lot of them think it's okay to kill people because other people don't have rights. Things of that nature. And that tie into the fringe right is a thing that worries me about people like Kanye West, because I've long said that, and I don't know if this is a great thing for me to say on record or not, but the first fringe right winger who can get over like their racism and feeling of superiority over Black people and learns how to properly manipulate the space of Black conservatism that intersects all of this stuff will realize that they got a very, 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 very large audience to pull from, because that sort of conservatism has long been prevalent in fringe aspects of Black culture. Again, we don't talk about it, but it's always been there. It's gotten bigger over the last few years, particularly with the influx of like plandemic and shit like that had a huge effect on this. And as soon as you find someone who figures out, like, hey, Candace Owens is onto something, but she's also a moron and I could do this better than her, let me take this and mold it into something else, that's a very dangerous potentiality, and something that I think we should all be paying attention to. Because Candace, I think, has a lot to do with a lot of the talking points that are coming out of Kanye West right now. That's not to say that, you know, I bring up his relationship, the relationship between, you know, the Black Israelites and hip hop and the 5% Nation and hip hop, you know, because Ye has a relationship with Louis Farrakhan that goes back like 23 years or something. So I bring those things up because I'm sure some of these ideas he's had for a while. But you'll note that the woman who's like the only Black person in his entourage left at this point got fired from Turning Point USA for saying that Adolf Hitler had a lot of great ideas. He just wanted to be a globalist. So it's dubious that right around the time that Candace Owens showed up in Kanye West's general vicinity, you started hearing reports that Kanye thought the Nazis were okay, or Adolf Hitler had some interesting ideas, or, you know, the Black people are the real Jews. I'm Jew. I get that you're Jewish, but I am Jew, which is very much a Black Hebrew turn of phrase. And it's again a group, like, the thing that's interesting about it, and it's funny because Black Hebrews oftentimes there's aspects of Freemasonry and the New Thought movement, something we covered last season on the show, involved in Black Hebrew practice. And in that way, it's very, very similar to New Age bullshit in that it picks and chooses what is and isn't important for them to find relevancy in. For example, Kanye West, who's been espousing viewpoints that are traditionally Black Muslim and Black Israelite, professes himself to be a Christian, and so do a lot of people who hold these beliefs. The one thing that I think is different from Christian identity adherence and Black Israelites is Christian identity people believe almost the exact same goddamn thing, but they call themselves Christians. Classification of Black Israelites kind of muddies the water a bit, because when you get down to it, these are really just Black fundamentalist Christians who believe that they're chosen by God. I don't even know if the fact that there is the word Israelite in there has anything to do with anything for a lot of these people, because, as I said, most of them do not recognize the Talmud, never learn Yiddish, do not practice any form of Judaism, and the only things that they really do are pray to the East and occasionally the Star of David is involved iconographically. But there's not really anything fundamentally Jewish about a lot of Black Israelites. Now, that's not all of them, because, as I said, it's a non-homogeneic religion, so there isn't really one way to be one. There's just cultural trends. And it's a movement that's also just sort of spread by word of mouth all through the South through the 18th century, and then during the Great Migration, ended up all over the rest of the fucking country. So it's for all intents and purposes, it does kind of relate to what we talked about with zombies, in that, kind of like voodoo, it's a bit of a folk religion and sort of has more of a commonality with like a slave religion than it does with Judaism, quote unquote. Although there are like Black Israelites who celebrate some Jewish holidays and things like that. It's really its own thing more than anything else. And like, if you listened to the Lex Fridman interview with Kanye West, he professed himself to be a Christian and a believer in Jesus Christ and God and the Holy Spirit. Like I said, very, you know, Southern Baptist / fundamentalist beliefs, while also calling himself a Jew. And that I can understand if you don't have any sort of an understanding of, oh, this is a 200-year-old movement that's been going on. That's a jarring thing to hear. But again, the reality is these sorts of Black exceptionalist movements, like the 5% Nation and the Black Hebrews, were part and parcel to the establishment of urban culture. You know, the first Black Hebrew, Black Israelite church was built in Harlem right after World War I. So Black Hebrews have been in New York for like 100 years. This is something that's been, and when you had, again, youth outreach going on in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, whenever like the establishment of hip-hop, like block parties, things of that nature were happening, these were the people who were out in the street trying to get people to come to church. So a lot of these kids, you know, you have generations of people at Kanye West's age who have been hearing this shit or a version of it. And like we talked about in the Bill Cooper episode, that a fixture in Brooklyn in the 80s and 90s would have been the Old Dirty Bastard standing on a street corner reading from Behold a Pale Horse at people. That's a tendency of the Black Israelites. Not to read Behold a Pale Horse specifically, but street preaching is very much an aspect of that practice. You know, engaging with people on the corner, talking to the people, whether you are screaming at the white man that you hope he dies, or trying to get the Black man to come to you because you have some literature for him. That word of mouth engagement that spread the Black Israelite movement in the first place is still largely how they recruit folk. And that's not to say they're effective at recruiting. They're not. There's only 40,000 of them, and they've been around for 200 years. They're doing slightly better than the Communist Party of the USA, but that's a whole other story. And to that point, part of the issue with groups like the Black Israelites and the 5% Nation both is at the height of COINTELPRO, they were reclassified by the FBI and the CIA as gangs. And so you had, with hip-hop in particular, with the 5% Nation and the Black Israelite movement, these religious groups in communities who were recontextualized as gangs, who then developed language to be able to communicate in such a way that law enforcement didn't know what the fuck they were talking about. And that is part of where hip-hop's, where slang, street talk came from. Yes, some of it is related directly to crime and drug dealing, etc., but another part of it is that the crime, quote-unquote, was regular social and cultural activity reclassified as crime by the government. So you had word is bond, represent, come to the cipher, drop the science, etc. All of these things that were just typical 90s parlance in urban music culture all came from the 5% Nation and the Black Israelite movement and their relationship to hip-hop. More so with the slang, the 5% Nation, because the sacred mathematics retaught brothers how to talk. That's a whole other thing that, like I said, because closed practice, I don't really want to get into the specifics of that, but a lot of how you grew up learning to talk, if you listened to like Public Enemy or Wu-Tang or anything like that, was derived directly from, you know, religious Black nationalism. And you probably didn't know that, and now you get why your dad hated rap music so much. And I'd also like to, before I get too worked up to remember, talk about the stuff Kanye is saying specifically and the reactions to it and why I think it's dangerous. In the interview that I watched last night, he explained that he was sorry for what he'd said about the Jews, but he felt that he needed to shock everyone in order to call attention to Black struggle. That you can't really, one of his statements, which is, you could spend an hour unpacking this on its own, but that you can't really compare the Holocaust to the Holocaust of the Black community, which is Planned Parenthood, because abortion is one of the largest killers of Black children. That's, by the way, a talking point that he got directly from Candace Owens. Her big thing for years has been that the two biggest threats to the Black community are abortion and homosexuality, because they stop us from breeding. They're big conservative Black talking points. So that wasn't necessarily shocking, but abortion was a Holocaust to the Black community, and that the Black community is sick, the Black community is hurting, the Black community is in all of these dire straits, and he's trying to call attention to that. And if I may, Kanye West, until this morning, because Adidas dropped him, was the richest Black man on earth, right? So he had more money than anybody. He had a unique cultural position where both Black people and white people were willing to listen to him. And he had billions of dollars in capital and the ability to purchase land. Why are you asking white people to fix the Black situation when you uniquely have the money, the ability, and the platform to do it yourself? The white people you're asking for help have less money than you. So what's the point of tweeting, we need to talk about the problem with Black folk in Chicago? Fix Chicago then. You got money. You're a billionaire. Come on. Like, I feel like it's a cop-out, personally, for you to say that you've gone on this anti-Semitic rant to call attention to black struggle when you, more than almost anyone else on earth, are uniquely capable of individually helping to ease, financially at least, black struggle. My dude, buy land in Wisconsin and let black folk move there for free. There's any number of ways you could address the housing problem, food deserts, you know, clean needle programs, any of these things, school education. What did you do for the black community? You opened a private school and you took Candace Owens on a field trip around the American media, and that means you give a fuck about black people. Get the fuck out of here. When I tell you that in this interview, this man was giving himself credit for hiring two black engineers as the richest black man on earth, your contribution to the black community was that you paid two black engineers to work for you. And see, this is why billionaires are a problem, and this is why you gotta stop. If you were like I used to be, and you think that, oh, we need to big up black people who get out of the rut and make something of themselves, quote unquote, and become billionaires, and this is why that is wrong, because ain't not a single goddamn one of them niggas came back and helped any of you. Period. None of them. Jay-Z went back after telling black people to boycott the NFL and inked an exclusivity deal with the NFL for halftime shows and music for like however many years. Kanye West hugged Donald Trump in a Make America Great Again hat and told you that slavery was a choice. And there's still people out here defending why they wear his ugly ass shoes and buy his albums. I can't with it. It's ridiculous to me. But for anybody to say, well, he's out here for the culture, what has he done? And comparatively with what he has the ability to do, you know, we all made a lot of fun of Elon Musk. What was that like last year whenever somebody told him how much money it would take for somebody to fix everything and he had that much money and his response was, if someone could tell me how me giving them this money would fix everything, I'll do it. And then he just didn't. You can't rely on billionaires to fix anything because we have an example right here in Kanye West of a black man with billions of dollars on Twitter talking about how can we fix the culture. We could ask Ye for some goddamn money and maybe he could fix up the projects. Maybe he could fix up the schools. Maybe he could help make jobs. Maybe he could start working with the government and figure out ways to get... No. Let's bitch about shoes. It's ridiculous. So even separate from and why I feel like it's necessary for people who don't have an understanding of black Israelism, the 5% nation and these things that he is pulling from as influences, it's important for you to understand those things. I think to an extent, it's even more important to understand that he's still just a bullshitter with billions of dollars, like every other person with billions of dollars who wants to give lip service to the idea of a free Tibet and helping the poor and saving the children and building schools or whatever. But at the end of the day, he's just pissed that Adidas didn't suck his dick. And probably that Kim did suck Pete's. That probably has something to do with it. You know, like if we're being real, GP about everything, the fact that his ex-wife was anyway fucking like a, what, 26-year-old white dude who looks like he's still in high school and has a heroin problem? That would send anybody over the deep end, I would imagine, but it's not like Kanye didn't have problems before that. If we want to go back to him spending 45 minutes on stage to talk about how Jay-Z was trying to have him silenced and then going off on rants about people's children and executives who work for companies that most of the audience has never even fucking heard of. You think that the average person from the south side of Chicago who bought tickets to your concert gives a fuck about Balenciaga or has any idea what the fuck you're talking about right now. What are we even doing? You think you're a man of the people and these are the conversations you're trying to have? Half the time through that interview, whenever he ain't have shit to say, he went back to talking about the zipper on his motherfucking hoodie. Like, the man is not as deep as you think he is, people who think he's deep. It's fake provocative. People in Hollywood have been doing it for decades. You say something kind of interesting, you pepper it in with something kind of offensive, and then you say something vague enough to sound kind of intelligent to people who don't read. That's every Johnny Depp interview. That's every Sean Penn interview. That's every Leonardo DiCaprio interview. These people aren't deep. They're shallow as fuck, and they're surrounded by people who never tell them how dumb they sound. That's how you get to be like Kanye West. And the worst part is the yes man in his corner is Candace fucking Owens. Again, a black woman who got fired for saying Adolf Hitler had great ideas. And she got fired from Turning Point USA. That should be impossible. But here we fucking are, and who has his ear? The woman who just put out a documentary 2 years after the fact about how the police didn't kill George Floyd. Something that's been medically proven for 2 fucking years and has now got him, his company, and her being sued for defamation by the family of George Floyd. That's the only person who has his back right now. Look like a chihuahua that got stuck under a drain pipe. That's who you got giving you advice. It's a goddamn shame. That's all I can say. And this isn't the first time that his proximity to her has found him saying things that have gotten him canceled or dropped or whatever the fuck you want to call it. I don't actually think canceling is real because all those motherfuckers still make money. But, you know, whenever he came out saying he and Donald Trump were brothers and they both had dragon energy and he dyed his hair blonde and he was wearing a fucking Trump hat, Candace Owens was there the whole time through all of that. And I still don't know how those two got hooked up. I would like to know who set that up because that person should be watched. But there's something to be said about the fact that his rhetoric took a strong turn for the right around the time she showed up, and that woman is a race grifter, and there's no other way to put it. If you're not familiar with Candace Owens, I envy you. She ran a website that used to dox people back in the day. Before that, she actually sued some people for racial harassment with the help of the NAACP and won like $30,000 or $40,000 in a financial decision right out of high school, if I'm not mistaken. But after that, she ran a website where she doxed people for online bullying. And she received information from somebody that she should be careful doing that because that could make her a target for online harassment, which she then spun as, I was threatened by the left into shutting down my doxing website, and that red-pilled me into the understanding that the left was a huge problem. I believe it was a combination of that and Gamergate. In her case, was what red-pilled her, so to speak. But she went from an outspoken liberal who sued people for racial harassment to getting in front of Congress to say that white supremacy isn't real. The biggest dangers facing the African-American community are homosexuality, feminism, and abortion in urban communities, and that Hitler was a great guy. His problem was he invaded Poland. And I don't know, in her case, I'm assuming it's money, because a lot of people come to the realization that there's a hell of a lot of money to be had in lying to people about generally conservative, fascist-leaning ideas and bullet points. There's an entire cottage industry in that. We've discussed it at length on this show. She's one of the first people to really come to prominence as a media personality, specifically saying, I'm black and all of your opinions about black people are correct. I share them. And ever since she came out, that space has expanded, and she's not the first person in that space. You'll note Clarence Thomas has occupied that space for quite some time. Ben Carson occupies that space. Stacey Dash occupies that space. Oprah Winfrey occupies that space. So she's not the first person to really be in the I'm black and anti-black, give me money space. And it's, don't get me wrong, it's a space that's financially lucrative. White people love a black person who hates black people. But in her case, she's managed to cling on to somehow the richest and most recognizable black man on earth. Well, until this morning. And I feel like that's something that more people should be paying attention to, asking questions about and aware of, because her rhetoric is dangerous and his platform is huge. And between the two of them, I don't know, I just think you should keep an eye on it. Now, it's worth mentioning that whenever she hooked up with him last time, she wanted him to be the face of her Blexit movement. I don't even like saying that. Not because I'm such a staunch Democrat or whatever, I'm not, but Blexit sounds fucking stupid. Her whole walk away, that thing, her rebranding of the walk away movement was Blexit, and she wanted Ye to be the face of that, and he did not want to be. His decision instead was to start something he called the birthday party and run for president for like a couple of weeks. Now it's hard to say where that line will be. You know, you've heard him say things about the 13th Amendment. You've heard him say slavery is a choice. You've heard him say things about the Jews. You've seen his relationship with Trump. You know he kind of still wants to run for office. And having her as his advisor is a bad thing in regards to all of that. So I don't know how this will play out. I tend to think that if it's an episode, I don't actually think it's an episode. But if it's an episode, he'll run out of steam eventually. I think a lot of people rely too heavily on the narrative that this is mental illness. I don't think it's mental illness. I think the closest thing you could call it is megalomania. But, you know, as a person who hears voices and shit, you don't catch me saying bad things about the Jews to 100 million people on television. So I don't know that those two things are necessarily correlatory. I think he may run out of steam, or what would be beneficial is if the media would stop giving him a fucking microphone and a camera. Like, this is, we talked about this a little bit in the Charles Manson episode, that one of the things that's sort of profound or provocative about Charles Manson is that anytime the media would show up and interview him and talk to him about how he's a monster and a cult figure, his response would be, then why the fuck are you interviewing me? Like, if I'm so dangerous, why are you putting me on television? Obviously something else is going on here. And I think any halfway discerning person can look at that and say, hey, he's got a point. And by the same token, there's a big cultural conversation going on right now about the dangers of what Kanye West is saying. And yet there's platforms with access to millions and millions of people putting him in front of cameras and asking him to talk. While simultaneously, in the case of Tucker Carlson, laundering out things he said that could make you look bad for putting him on the air while still benefiting from putting him on the air, which is disingenuous and dishonest. But what else would you expect from Tucker Carlson? You don't go there for good journalism. I don't actually know where you go for good journalism. If that's a thing you seek out, good fucking luck. But it's a shame in the sense that you have this cat with millions and millions and millions of people who want to know what he's saying. So a gigantic platform having some kind of a meltdown or some sort of a right-wing epiphany experience, whatever the fuck you want to call is going on with Ye right now. And we have a media sphere that is uniquely equipped to exploit people in that particular situation. We've seen it with dozens of people throughout the years. Britney Spears is probably one of the better examples of that. That as soon as she started having issues, there was nothing more prevalent in the media than watch this white woman have a general psychotic break and meltdown before your very eyes. And you know, we have plenty of media institutions from TMZ to Fox News that are ready to take snapshots of whatever is happening with him right now. But I think that the most beneficial thing for everybody would be to stop giving him a microphone. I mean, if you believe this is mental illness, I don't. I'm going to be completely blunt. I don't believe what's going on with Kanye West is mental illness. If you believe that, then the most responsible thing for you to do is stop giving him an audience and encourage him to get help. And eventually he'll run out of enablers and maybe he'll get help. But this situation where it's, man, Kanye's really unraveling. Let's go to his house and give him a microphone. Or not. You know, there are plenty of other ways you can deal with. And I think that that's, if there is anything sympathetic left about this man for me at this point, and that's questionable. I may have passed my limit with Ye at this point, but if there is anything sympathetic in this entire situation, it is watching a dude who has always been emotionally unstable be cannibalized by the American entertainment media. And I guess you could say that that's, you know, maybe a misogynist take, because we watch that happen to women in entertainment media all the fucking time. To the point that it's not an event when it happens to a woman, because that's just something that happens to women in entertainment media. And in a sense, it's an event because it's not something you usually see happen publicly to a man in entertainment. And perhaps we could have a conversation about that. But I do think that the way we rubberneck car crash situations in people's lives is troubling, and something that we as a society should probably address about ourselves, because it's an ugly fucking practice. You know, I talked to someone a couple of weeks ago, and I felt that this was a stupid opinion to have at the time, but that true crime exists so that we don't have public executions. It's a stupid fucking take, I know. But if you extrapolate from that, that whatever juice people were getting out of public hangings and public executions, they need to get from other things. How many people have compared reality TV to the Colosseum? Like, there is absolutely an exploitative, voyeuristic aspect to fame in American culture, and how we enjoy watching people kind of fall apart under the pressure of being the new gods we make them as celebrities. And I don't know what it is about us that makes us do that, but it's absolutely a thing we do and have done for quite some time. And in a lot of ways, Kanye is just the new Britney, you know. That's not me advocating for a conservatorship or anything like that. I'm just saying this is the most recent in a long, long, long line of celebrities who are, you know, they're given a whole lot of pressure. There's a lot of pressure and anxiety and things of that nature that go along with that. And then we all kind of just watch the chemistry of, well, let's add a failing marriage. Let's add a waning career with record sales that aren't what you expected them to be. And one of your chief competition is Drake. And by the way, he just bought a house down the street. Like, all of these things, I have to assume. Your best friend or whatever, Jay-Z, no longer answers your phone calls because you got fucked up and went on a rant about his kids on stage in Atlanta. Like, there's a lot of factors, I think, that go into where the man is at now. I think he's earned it. And I don't know what to say beyond that. Like, I don't even know if I feel comfortable saying I hope he gets help, because kind of fuck him at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I do hope, get help, I guess, for if not for yourself, then because the things that you say have negative effect on other people, whether you're capable of realizing it or not. I think he may be too self-absorbed and narcissistic to understand that the things he says affect other people, but if that's the thing he's capable of, I would hope that he gets help for the benefit of the people who listen to him. But beyond that, fuck him and the horse he rode in on. And fuck Candace Owens too. And quite frankly, fuck anyone who is giving him. I think Friedman gets a pass as a Jewish cat who wanted to hash out some of the points that he saw Kanye making. There's a pass there, but everybody else, fuck you if you're putting him on TV or giving him a microphone. You should know better. Shame on you. And that's all I have for today, really. I just felt like I needed to get some of that stuff off my chest. It's difficult seeing people have a conversation without all of the components, you know, and as a person who really was a student of hip hop, I think it's fair to say, especially back in the 90s, up through the early 2000s, and a person who studied Bill Cooper, which intersected with the 5% Nations and the Black Israelites and all of these things, to see people be like, I don't understand where any of this is coming from. And then to kind of look at it from the sidelines and think you don't understand how much this is actually permeated, as a matter of fact. It's just like, it's something that, like I said, I opened the show with several times, that finally I got to a point where, you know, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to talk about it until I feel like I've said everything that I need to say. And then I can go back to talking about aliens and other things, which now we'll be able to do. We'll get back on track here on Friday. I completely blew past making the announcement that we have a new member of the Hep Cult. I want to thank Zeus and welcome Zeus to the Hep Cult. If you would like to join the Hep Cult and you like what we do here and you'd like to help me pay bills and things of that nature, you can do so by going to www.patreon.com/comeandseepod. And there's a few different options for you there as far as subscription tiers with some different things available to you based on what you choose. Pick your poison. Right now, the availability of bonus content and merch is fairly limited because I'm usually just way too goddamn busy getting the show together. But those things are coming, so when they're available, you'll have them. And you know, I think that's fuck, stick a fork in me, eh? I think I'm done, right? So, fair enough. Okay. we'll be back. Same Mox time, same Mox channel. As I said, on Friday, we're going to be discussing demon possession, channeling, angelology, Pentecost and Pentecostal Christians, and how I think Pentecostal Christians are just pagans. So that's coming up this Friday as we return to spooky season. And oh, did you guys like the new theme song? I was gonna use the season 3 theme, you know, the kind of groovy fucking Ill Street Blues thing that we've been doing, but I decided instead that I would do this as sort of as a Mox Speaks episode. Doesn't really have like a curriculum that I'm following, so to speak. This is kind of a special bulletin, and I decided kind of at the last minute to make a new intro for special bulletin episodes. I don't know why. I probably should figure out how to manage my time better, but I seem to be refusing to do that. So until that happens, enjoy the new thing. The next time we do another special bulletin, I'll break this back out, but we'll probably go back to the spooky music on Friday anyway. Let me know if you like it. If you like it, I'll keep it around. I'll figure out a way to use it for something. Maybe I'll make it the season 4 intro and jazz it up with some different clips or something. I don't know. But I thought, why not do something nice for the people before you yell at them for an hour, Mox? So there you go. I hope you like. So we'll reconvene on Friday to talk about demons and goblins and angels and channeling and I think Pentecostal Christians. So that should be fun. But in the meantime, concentrate on the Hep, everybody. I have been Moxie O'Brien. This has been Come and See, and I will catch all of you beautiful people on the flip side. Smooches, deuces, dig it.
Finished.